Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Tea Party can go straight to hell.
The real enemy is the Tea Party.
Some of them in Congress right now under this Tea Party movement would love to see you and me hanging on a tree.
You are the only folks keeping the barbarians from the gate.
Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much.
I think he's got to draw a line in the sand. I mean, he can't get rolled over again. He's got to sit down and say, look, and go to the American people. There's going to be an election in 12. And the answer is maybe we wipe these people out.
I rest my case. I have never seen anything like this in my life. We have the Black Caucus. We have the Teamsters president, James Hoffa Jr., saying take these people out. And this is not happening by accident. This is an orchestrated desire to stir up enmity in this country and conduct a campaign of terror that, if you fall for their trap, will lead to a civil war in the country, which only benefits the left-wing elite radicals who want to take this country apart to the extent it'll never be put back together again like Humpty Dumpty. Now, I'm going to talk about this because I told you yesterday, I don't have any evidence. It's one man's opinion. I'm sitting here watching the world go round in my yellow submarine. And I believe that this is being orchestrated by the Obama administration from the top down, first using the Congressional Black Caucus, then the unions, and God knows what's going to happen next. But given the violence of the Teamsters in the past, I would expect violence in the very near future unless the American people stand up and don't fall for it, number one, and unless, number two, the government protects the people from the unions. Now, that's a strange statement. In the early days, the Teamsters were known for what they are. I mean, Mr. Hoffa's father did a lot for the truck drivers, there's no question about it. But we also know all of the shady dealings that were involved, and as a result, there have been movies written about it, and the FBI knew very much what was going on with the Teamsters Union Fund in Las Vegas. Everyone knows that. It's part of the American history. But in those days, you had a government that knew what was going on and worked to stop it. Today we have a government that knows what's going on and works to, let us say, move it along. MoveOn.org? What do you mean by MoveOn.org? Move what on? Move gangsterism on? Move criminality on? Move an attack on the middle class on? Move a war against the middle class, who is now called the Tea Party, to a point where you're saying to people, go take them out? Now let me tell you something. Something you have to know. This is very important. I got this email from my literary agent, Michael. He says, your book is number 20 on Amazon. It started at 5,000 yesterday before the show began. He said, but the titles numbers 1 to 19 are only the paperbacks, self-help, nonfiction, or children's books, which means that your novel, Abuse of Power, appears to me to be the number one hardcover fiction title right now. This is an amazing thing. You have made Abuse of Power the number one hardcover fiction title overnight. And I'm talking to the audience of the Savage Nation. Let me continue. This is very important for you to know there, because this is tied right into the politics of the day. The fact that you could drive my novel, Abuse of Power, to the number one hardcover fiction title overnight, just from this show alone, without the help of the high and mighty, without Fox News, without Rush Limbaugh, without anybody in the media other than you, they all said Michael Savage was too extreme, that Michael Savage didn't play ball, that he made people uncomfortable. Well, let me tell you something. The Savage Nation has broken away from the establishment and from the so-called conservative counterparts and you have started your own grassroots movement of real people. Some of you belong to tea parties, but most of you are independent voters who belong to nothing but to America. You are out to change this country. You are dedicated to this nation, and you're not paid to do it, and you're not paid to do it, and you're not there to gain power, but you're doing it simply because you love this country. Let me be perfectly clear. The cable news networks did not send abuse of power to number one on Amazon overnight. The bloggers who ignore me didn't send abuse of power to number one overnight. The radio hosts did not send to abuse of power overnight. It was you, the listeners of the Savage Nation, who sent it to number one amongst fiction hardcover overnight. Other writers like Dick Cheney have made numerous TV appearances for weeks, and their books have virtually gone nowhere. I talked about this book for a single day on a single talk radio show, and I got more than all of their media connections could have ever gotten them. Now, here's where I'm going with this. This program, this audience, this show, this listenership is the most unrequited force of social change in the United States of America. I'll repeat it to you again. You are not connected to the media elites. You are not connected to anybody. You are the independent voters of America. You actually determined what happened in 2012 in October, which the media wants to conveniently forget occurred. We had an election after the communists seized power. We had an election after he was put into power by the bankers of Wall Street and the bankers of Zurich. We had an election, and the Democrats were thrown out on their keisters. And it happened because the independents of America have had enough of the fake Republicans like Romney. Now, I don't care that Romney won't come on the show. He's committing Harry Caray. I don't care that Perry won't come on the show. He's also committing Harry Caray. I don't care that the Amway woman will not come on the Savage Nation. She's already fallen to last place because she gave you the middle finger. After using you and making money from you, Bachman said drop dead to you. They're all the same. Let me tell you something. They're all full of crap, every last one of them. Until I know otherwise, they're all full of crap. They're all part of the establishment. And you have demonstrated why Obama and every false conservative in the Republican Party should be very, very frightened right now. They've lost their grip on the average person. If my novel, Abuse of Power, can be made into the number one book on Amazon.com amongst fiction, hardcover, without anybody's help, then the media is no longer needed. If books that are boosted by the government media complex can be displaced by one man speaking the truth and the people who believe passionately in me, then come the next election, these politicians will be out of a job. You have voted for abuse of power and the Savage Nation. And soon, this same force will drive you to the ballot box. You are part of something enormous right now, much stronger, much more tangible than the media elites will ever be. The empty skirts have long since predicted the death of talk radio and the death of the Savage Nation, but we're still here. This show is getting stronger. How else can you explain a book going to number one without the support of the cable networks, without Fox News, without the newspapers, without the fake conservative radio hosts? I may be invisible to them. They think that in order to be successful, I have to line up and kiss their rings. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know the right people, and I don't say the right things. I speak only what I think to be the truth. I may be unknown, but I'm known by the Savage Nation, and that's all that counts to me. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. Savage.
It's a boxing match. You got to get in there and mix it up. You want to dish it out? You got to get in close enough that you, too, have the possibility of getting hurt. That's life, my friends. It's give and take and mix it up. And that's what I am not afraid of. And that is what made the Teamsters what we are today. And I'm proud of it.
I think he's got to draw a line in the sand. I mean, he can't get rolled over again. He's got to sit down and say, look, and go to the American people. There's going to be an election in 12. And the answer is maybe we wipe these people out.
Wipe these people out. Take these sons of bitches out. Calls workers Obama's army. And you're not worried? I would be very worried indeed. These are serious men. These are very, very serious people. I am putting myself in danger by even playing this. I'm no fool. You think I don't know that I'm putting myself in danger by finding clips from the movie Hoffa played by the actor Jack Nicholson, and then playing a man channeling the script from the movie. It's astounding to me that this is going on, and I'm the only one in the media who seems to be making the connection. You should be very frightened, but you shouldn't be intimidated. It's one thing to be frightened and continue to be active. It's another thing to be frightened and to run away from the fight. Don't run away. Join a Tea Party. Because, Ahafa, join one if you've never joined before. Because one thing is true. There are many, many more people like you than there are them. You are the middle class. You are the taxpayer. He represents the tax takers. They've, of course, twisted the dialogue into making you think that they're the workers, workers of the world unite. It's not workers of the world unite. You're the workers, and you've said that you've taxed us enough. So who has he marshaled? He's marshaled those who represent those who pay no taxes, those who live on the public largesse, those who live on welfare and food stamps and every benefit known to mankind, those who are on federal, state, and local municipal jobs. Those are the people who are fighting you, who pay their salaries and their fat pensions. But I say don't fall into the trap set by Hoffa and Obama. The Labor Day speech with this cursing and warlike imagery where he called upon his fellow Democrats to take out their opponents. Well, let me tell you something. Given the Teamsters Union's violent history, I would not dismiss Hoffa's speech as just harmless rhetoric. And let me tell you something else. History is repeating itself. What's going on in America today with the Black Caucus first, and now the unions trying to stir up civil unrest, is right out of the pages of history. Back in the 1920s, in Germany, the unions and the communists were acting in a very similar manner. There are many comparisons that could be made between the Weimar Republic of then and the United States of today. Think about the cultural degeneracy. Think about the sewer pipe that comes out of Hollywood. Think about public nudity in San Francisco. Think about the out-of-control spending by the government, the inflationary trends, the devaluation of the currency. Now, the unions and the communists became street thugs in Germany, as they are becoming under Obama, threatening both the middle class that is shrinking and threatening small businesses as they did then. And who came to power to battle those German street thugs, the communists and the unions? Why, it was the despicable, racist Nazi brown shirts. All of this violence led to the rise of Adolf Hitler. And today I believe this unrest is being orchestrated from the top by Obama's orchestration leader, David Axelrod. They want to provoke you. They want you to become more thuggish than they are. But that would give Obama an excuse to seek even greater power than he already has. Don't fall for it. Don't overreact. Don't let them turn you into thugs like they are. This abuse of power by Hoffa and Obama is a trap. Don't fall into it. Now let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. Sammy in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I want to tell you why your book is number one. After hearing that prologue that you read yesterday, I got so excited that I went running to my local Barnes & Noble, but they told me they did not have the book. But I feel so proud to be a listener today of Michael Savage Show.
Well, it is out next Tuesday. I don't think they have the book yet, but I pre-talked about it so that people could go to Amazon and move it up. It was 5,000 at the start, Sammy, but I'm going to send you a free copy today. Thank you for calling. Las Vegas, Dave, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Just want to tell you that I can't believe it shot up so high. I heard your show yesterday. I haven't even ordered the book. I've actually gone onto Amazon today. I have not ordered your book. It's now been ordered, but I can't believe that as of yesterday it was so high. So now
it was 5,000 at the beginning of the show, 5,000 and some odd. At the end of the show, it had moved to number like by nightfall 2021. But my agent analyzed the list, and he said to me that the titles, numbers 1 through 19, are either paperback, self-help, nonfiction, or children's books, which means that Abuse of Power appears to him to be the number one hardcover fiction title before it's even published. That's a pretty big statement about the audience, the audience, the audience. And I got to repeat this. If it was only about me peddling a book, it wouldn't be exciting. But it's the same force that threw the Democrats out in the last election. Remember, we had an election after the shyster was put into power. After this imposter was forced down our throats, by the same type of people who fixed the 1919 World Series. They fixed the election and threw Obama down our throats with a little help from their Republican cronies, like John McCain shooting himself in the foot on purpose during the last few debates. McCain could have won this election. He was the fall guy. That was my analysis then. All right. Then what happened? Election in 2010. All the Democrats lost with the exception of two races. And the media wants to pretend there was no election. There was an election. And the people have had enough of these communists.
You're the leader of the movement. You're the absolute leader of this movement that is going to that needs to change this media from Hollywood.
Well, how could I be a leader of anything if I'm just one man alone in a room talking on a radio show? I don't even do public appearances. I don't even have a blackboard. I don't even have a blackboard and eyeglasses and the Fox News camera.
We're with you. There's millions and millions out here that are with you.
Well, you are the independent voters who listen to this show, and that's why the people look. My audience attracts more independent voters than any other talk show in America. I would stick by that characterization. Sure, Rush's show is bigger, but it's mainly, I'd say, 90% Republican apparatchiks. That's who listens to Rush Limbaugh. He's very comfortable for them because he preaches the Republican line, and we need him. Make no mistake about it. We absolutely need a Republican water carrier. We need them very badly. As far as Wallbanger goes, well, Wallbanger is Wallbanger. That will change very, very shortly. Within a year or two, the whole landscape of radio will change, and I can guarantee you that the commitment I made when I started in radio will be fulfilled. I had a certain goal. I'm not where I want to be yet, although it's further than I thought I would be. I dreamed of one thing, and I've achieved another. But I predict something else will happen within the next 2 years. You're going to be shocked by it when it does happen. 1-800-449-8255, New Hampshire. Jay, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, after hearing those short clips that you played of Hoffa speaking, I was just so shocked. You know, I've never joined any Tea Party. I've never gone to any functions or anything like that because I have to admit it, I've had my doubts. I'm going to take time off of work. I'm going to do whatever it is I have to do to go join the nearest Tea Party that I have to me.
Right. That's right. 10 million people need to join their local Tea Party in order to show the unions and the Marxists and the bankers who are doing this to this country before it's too late. That's right. They hate the Tea Party for a reason, because you are America. They may as well say, I hate America, for them saying, I hate the Tea Party. You are America. You are the grassroots movement that the rent-the-mobs could never have ever created.
Savage.
That, of course, is fiction, art, Jack Nicholson in the movie Hoffa. But now we have life imitating art, or was it the other way around? We don't know anymore under Obama. Everything is a mirage. So it's very difficult to know what is fact and what is fiction. What would you like me to do for you now on the Savage Nation? Would you like me to read from the book, or you want me to wait on it until next week when you can go out and buy it? Does anyone have a copy and you'd like to call in and read one of your favorite pieces? Okay, 1-800-449-8255. Or I have some great political callers, and I'm going to go to them first, whatever we do. Chicago, Arlene, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, got your book on order. Can't wait. I'm excited about it. I love 24, my favorite show on television.
Oh, yeah, 24 in the beginning when they were able to call Islamo-fascists before they gelded the writers and the actors. That was a fabulous series.
I just want to confirm what you have been saying for a long, long time. I have friends who were born, and they were actually in World War II in Germany. And when, after this president was elected, he started speaking, husband and wife, she came to me and she said, Arlene, It's just like what Hitler was saying. So I am, you're absolutely right on target there, Dr.
Wait. You're saying that people who escaped Hitler's Germany see a comparison between the Marxist, Obama the Marxist, and Hitler the fascist?
Yes, absolutely. And
well, I'm the first to have pointed out that Hitler was a socialist. I mean, I did that over 12 years ago in the media. Very few people understood that. Nazi means national socialism. The left wants to refuse that, but it's factually true. I studied this in great detail, but the reason he gets away with it is twofold. One, because he's not a white man. That's number one. And people are afraid to see what they actually say, what they actually see. And two, because he's one of the most clever sophists to have ever invaded the office of the White House. Make no mistake about it. He's the most successful president in history in terms of changing this country. And I would say change for the worse. Thank you for the call. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Okay, next caller, Kansas City Ralph. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I just want to make a comment about Mr. Hoffa Jr. and him wanting to wage war against the Tea Partiers. Well,
yes.
The first way he could probably start it is by having the Teamsters launching a strike, which wouldn't just put the Tea Party, but everybody in this country at a standstill.
No, you mean strike where? Strike the truck drivers?
Truck drivers, dock workers are all covered under...
No, he won't do that because it would weaken the economy further, which would be a disaster for Obama. That is absolutely not going to happen under no condition. I mean, let's face it. The government and the unions are one now. They're not separated. It's not like the government versus the unions. It's the unions are the government. It's the same in California. Our governor, Jerry Brown, was put in power by the unions. The SEIU, the very same forces of the left that put Obama in power, put Jerry Brown in power. There's no question that we have the most radical left-wing governments in American history now ruining the country. Not ruling, but ruining the country. Free copy of Abuse of Power to this gentleman. What should I do? Should I read you from the book? I don't know, because then I give away the book. I could read you the sex scenes. They're very good. There's a couple of lovemaking scenes in here that I think are quite good, but you see people say, oh, come on, conservatives don't know how to make love. They only believe in the missionary method, you know, with sheets and all. But you got to understand that there are conservatives who actually know what sexuality is, and there are conservatives who read books, write books, go to the movies. We actually eat and drink, and if you pinch us, we scream, and if you tickle us with a feather, we laugh. You know, we're just like you. You don't realize that, you liberals. You think only you are capable of laughter and of orgasm. But the fact of the matter is it's not limited to psychotic liberals. Oh, I got to have a good time one of these days. How about this? Shall I read you? Okay, I'll read you another page or two from Abuse of Power. We are on page 41, and here's one of the villains, Hassan Haddad, and it's set in Sofia, Bulgaria. Sofia, Bulgaria. How does a guy from the Bronx know about Sofia, Bulgaria? Well, read it and listen. Here it comes. The moment, wait a minute. Oh, no, this is even better. The page before it is even better. Jack is somewhere. Here it is. Oh, you're going to love this. Here's, remember yesterday I read from the press conference after the bombing goes off in San Francisco, and they saw the black kid who saw it happen said that there was an Arab in the car before it blew up, and then they try to blame it on white militia members, and the FBI gives a fake press conference. Okay. So now I'll pick it up from there on page 36, Michael Savage, Abuse of Power. Jack Hatfield's fall from grace had been swift and brutal and had come when he could least afford it. Already in the midst of his divorce, he was a year into a new contract hosting Truth Tellers, one of the top-rated opinion shows on the GNT cable news network, when he was blindsided by accusations that he was an unrepentant Islamophobe. The accusations were nonsense, of course. Jack had long been a champion of religious freedom and free speech, and anyone who watched the show knew that. But the liberal media elite took it upon themselves to take his words out of context so they could twist and amplify them. They went after him like a starving jackal chasing an eastern cottontail. As much as Jack believed in religious tolerance, he drew the line at murder. And whether his detractors liked it or not, Muslim extremists were the face of terror around the globe. Time and again, they had demonstrated a willingness to kill in the name of Allah. Pointing out that simple fact and suggesting oh so gently that a few more imams should be speaking against the killing instead of getting wound up stumping for a controversial mosque in the heart of San Francisco, did not even begin to rise to the level of hate speech. The exact, very rational words that started the anti-Hatfield fatwa were these. Hell, if these guys did more of the first, no one would ever complain about them wanting to do the second. Jack knew he wasn't doing his career any favors by compounding that statement with reports that the mosque was being funded by a Saudi business consortium he believed had ties to a Wahhabi jihadist organization called the Hand of Allah. Several mosques funded by the same group had been built in London and throughout the United Kingdom, and Jack was convinced they were superficially mosques and fundamentally training facilities for Islamofascist sleeper agents. In the days that followed his initial remarks, Jack regularly took Prime Minister Griffiths to task for allowing these facilities to be built. The last act of the drama occurred just 10 days after it started, when he held a truth-tellers panel debate on the topic, bringing in participants from across the political spectrum. The debate was civil until Jack asked a simple rhetorical question. He said, "How would you feel if Muslim extremists got hold of a nuclear weapon?" There was a momentary chill in the air. Then one of the panelists, a supercilious professor of legal studies named Aldrich, said, "You're assuming that's even likely." Jack said, "You're naive if you think it isn't. And let's not forget what Al-Rahman al-Rashid told us, that while it's true that not all Muslims are terrorists, the majority of terrorists are Muslim," close quote. "All right, but considering there are approximately 1 billion Muslims in the world, how exactly do you propose to stop them?" Jack said, "When you factor in the laissez-faire attitude of much of our country, the odds against us aren't good. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that just 10% of those 1 billion Muslims are fanatic haters who would kill all of us at the blink of an eye, a matter of us versus them." "And," said Aldrich, "well, if it came down to it, would you rather see 100 million of us killed or kill 100 million Muslims?" Murmurs rose from the panel, and Aldrich just stared at him with a self-satisfied grin. Within hours, a smear campaign was carefully orchestrated by a radical watchdog group called Media Wire, which spared no effort to grind Jack's reputation into the dust beneath its jackbooted heel. "Host of truth tellers would kill 100 million Muslims," was the headline tossed into the echo chamber, bolstered by an edited clip of the show that isolated his last words and removed all context. The distinction between true Muslims and those who perverted their faith to justify their violence, a distinction Jack always tried to make, was completely ignored by the media. The man behind this campaign was a reclusive, Austrian-born billionaire named Lawrence Soren. The 81-year-old had made his fortune by betting against national currencies. He profited almost $1 billion on the British pound alone. Just after the catastrophic Japanese earthquake of March 2011 and the disasters in their nuclear power plants, he had shorted Tokyo Electric and made hundreds of millions on the tragedy. No government would stop this rapacious beast because he owned their leaders. He also had a controlling financial interest in several major news organizations in the United States and much of the world, including the recent acquisition of the company that controlled the majority of GNT's stock. By the time Soren was done, Truth Tellers had not only lost half of its sponsors, but Jack was being told by the network that he had to apologize on air to the Muslim community or face immediate termination. Because he felt he was innocent, not because he was afraid, Jack reluctantly tried an on-air explanation. It was exactly 15 words long. Here's what he said. "It was not my intention to discredit all Muslims," he said, "only those who seek to harm us," close quote. Before the night was out, before the show was over, in fact, he found himself as jobless as if he'd eaten apple pie off a map of Mecca. Trapped in a contract that kept him from moving his show to another network, he was finished. Time magazine listed the sudden fall as one of the 20 biggest blunders in television history, a massive chunk of hyperbole if ever there was one. Anyway, to Jack's mind, standing up for his principles wasn't a blunder at all. He would lose sight of that for a while afterward as he looked for a place to put his key. But that's the beauty about the truth. However long you turn away from it, it's still the truth and still there. Abuse of Power, page 39. I'll read you one more paragraph. The final twist of the knife came 3 weeks later. I'll continue this when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
See, let me explain something. This is a hybrid. I mean, it's a novel. It's fiction, and it's fast, and it's considered light reading. But it's a political thriller, as you can see, based on a true story. I mean, those of you who have supported me in my battle against the United Kingdom understand that this is based upon a true story. Sometimes fiction is closer to the truth than you can actually say on air. So let me just finish from the last page, because I'm almost through with it. So he loses his show because he's smeared by the equivalent of the groups that are being funded by somebody you very well know. The final twist of the knife came 3 weeks later. I'm reading from page 39 of Abuse of Power. The final twist of the knife came 3 weeks later when the British Home Office released a list of terrorists and criminals who were banned from traveling to the United Kingdom. To Jack's utter surprise, his name was on that list. The Home Secretary hadn't bothered to include Osama bin Laden, but right there, front and center, was John Samuel Hatfield, former combat journalist and network news commentator, whose, quote, radical and provocative statements, unquote, were deemed a threat to public security. Several weeks later, the London Daily News ran a story on the ban, revealing a series of illuminating email exchanges between the Home Office and the Prime Minister. What the newspaper uncovered was a case of political cowardice in the extreme. Jack Hatfield was being used to make the British government's bias against Muslims seem relatively tame and tolerant. This was the same government that many believed was instrumental in the concurrent release by Scottish officials of Abdel Basset El-Magiri, a convicted terrorist who was responsible for the fiery deaths of 270 people on an airplane passing over Lockerbie. Months later, it came out that the very Home Secretary who had banned Jack had been using government funds to support her husband's pornography viewing habit. When a reporter from a London tabloid had asked Jack for a newspaper quote, here's what he said, quote, her politics are more pornographic than any sex scene. What can be more obscene than the government of the UK refusing to deport radical Muslims who preach the overthrow of England, demand the introduction of Sharia law, and chant death to the Queen, all the while refusing to lift the ban against Jack Hatfield? I am the only member of the American media prohibited from entering the UK because of the degenerate political minds of the Home Secretary and her cohorts, close quote. So you see, I said that in the novel, which I couldn't say here on the radio. I'll just finish out the page. The hypocrisy of the UK and the weak-kneed sensibilities of his own nation were stunning. But with his credibility all but destroyed, he was forced to surrender those battles, withdraw from the national scene, use his wits and skills and whatever closet supporters he had left, and thank God there were a bunch of them, to earn a living. He did it alone because his wife had withered under the scrutiny and catcalls, the burning bags of feces on a doorstep, and the death threats on voicemail. He made his deals in back rooms, wrote or produced anonymously, because even his friends were afraid of Lawrence Soren, Muslim backlash, or both. But he did it all, survived, so he could get to this point. Not to stroke his wounded pride, not to show a president or prime minister that, by God, he was right. He did it for this one chance to help the nation save itself from itself. The next scene is set in Sofia, Bulgaria, where Hassan Haddad goes to assassinate somebody. 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to The Savage Nation. I'm actually stirred reading my own book. I wouldn't read it if I was bored of it. I think you can hear my own excitement from my own writings. Again, I want to reiterate, the book is not yet in the stores. The only place you can order it right now are on the internet, on Amazon.com. But if you keep driving it to the top, it's going to change the shape of the fiction landscape, which will change the shape of the movie landscape, which will change the shape and the scape of the minds of America, because they only go to the movies. And the only movies are anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-family, pro-marijuana, pro-degeneracy. There's not one F word in my book. I don't need to resort to the F words. Not one F word. Not one. Yes, there are scenes of lovemaking, but there's a huge difference between lovemaking and pornography, something that Hollywood has forgotten a long time ago. Okay, let's go to the callers. Let's start again at the East Coast area. Well, the East Coast area. The East Coast. I'm a little excited. Pete in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, how are you?
Yes.
Great to talk to you, sir. I have no computer. I had to have my son pre-order your book. I'm an avid listener.
You're one of the people. Actually, there are people who listen who are not using computers, and some of them, like yourself, have children and relatives who will do it for you. I understand. There's no shame in it. I have friends with PhDs who don't use their computer, and they won't have a cell phone, if you can believe it. There are people like that. They just won't do it. They don't want to be tied up with people chatting to them all day long or bothering them with emails. I get it. I myself am addicted to the computer. I'm a computer addict. I must admit it, Pete. It started a long time ago with television addiction when I was 5 years old. But I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Stay in the line. Let's go to Chicago. Jeremiah, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, I wanted to say, I think anybody that has some sort of a name recognition could kind of hype up at least one book and sell a bunch of copies. But I think the reason you're able to sell multiple copies of every book that you write is because of the substance. I don't have your new book, but when you're reading clips on the air, you can, as you're reading or as people are going to be reading, it kind of plays like a movie in your head. You know, people don't like reading and then have to reread the paragraph because it's not put together well and you can't visualize it. But when you're reading your clips, it's almost like it's playing out like a movie right in your head.
Again, I want to repeat, the reason my radio show has been popular these 17 or 18 years is because I speak pictographically. Chinese is a pictographic language. They write with pictures, right? But I actually speak pictographically in English, and I think that's what makes the radio show that I do so compelling. When I speak, images pop in your head, right?
Yep. I can't believe I don't get in car accidents on my way home from work because I'm visualizing what you're saying on the radio.
Oh, well, you know why? Because I'm an older guy. I grew up listening to radio on my father's lap as he smoked himself to the next world smoking pell-mell. He was actually a working-class man as opposed to the fake ones running for office. But I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. And by the way, if secondhand smoke killed, I would have been dead at 7 from all of the secondhand smoke I inhaled in my father's lap. What rubbish that we have listened to from the rubbish that they put out, secondhand smoke. It's unbelievable to me. Here in San Francisco, God forbid you should light up a cigarette, but the vermin, the degenerates, the sickos, the perverts are allowed to walk around naked everywhere in the city. And to make matters worse, these degenerate, sick pieces of garbage are going into restaurants naked and sitting on chairs and eating naked in a restaurant. And you have to sit on a chair where their dirty, disgusting butts were sitting before. That's what happens when you have liberal degenerates running a city. That's what happens in Nancy Pelosi's backyard with her values. That's what happens in America when the communists and degenerate perverts take over. And if that's a little too rough for you, stay tuned for another hour because it's going to get even better. I can guarantee it.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Tea Party can go straight to hell.
The real enemy is the Tea Party.
Some of them in Congress right now in this Tea Party movement would love to see you and me hanging on a tree.
You are the only folks keeping the barbarians from the gate.
Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much.
I think he's got to draw a line in the sand. I mean, he can't get rolled over again. He's got to sit down and say, look, and go to the American people. There's going to be an election in 12. And the answer is maybe we wipe these people out.
Be frightened. Be very frightened indeed. Wipe these people out. Take these sons of bitches out. Tea Party is the enemy. There is a war, ladies and gentlemen, whether you like it or not, whether you wanted it or not, you have been targeted. Now, who is you? Who are you? Who's the Tea Party? They would like America to believe that the Tea Party, a group of people from the movie, I forget the name of the movie where they had buck teeth, you know, and they went around just killing people. But the Tea Party is the middle class of America. The Tea Party are the folks who actually pay taxes. As I have said, and I use common sense, tell me if I'm wrong, Let us use common sense for a moment. They're attacking the Tea Party as though it's some fringe group, right? As if there's a single Tea Party, number one, which there isn't. The Tea Party movement is the grassroots movement that the radical left has never been able to actually create. They have rent-a-mobs, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. Those are rent-a-mobs, basically rent-a-mobs. They pay people to come and threaten businesses to shake them down, in my estimation. But now you have a spontaneous movement of tax-paying people who have said enough is enough. The government's out of control. Stop the spending. Stop sending money to your friends on Wall Street. Stop paying off the guys who did this to us, etc., and so on. Rein in Obama's insane spending. Tell Michelle to stop spending $10 million a year on vacations. In other words, they're you and I. We're taxed to death and we don't want to pay anymore. And they've tried to make it sound as though the Tea Party are a group of people from Deliverance. Rapists, murderers, thugs, etc. But make no mistake about it, what they're doing is they're attacking the middle class. They're attacking the taxpayer in support of the tax takers. Where do you think that $1 trillion in stimulus money went? Has it gone to you? Has it gone to anyone you know? Where's it gone? Where's the money? Does anyone know where it went? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not really anti-union. I've been a member of two unions in my life. Unions did some good work for people. They took workers that were disorganized and gave them a health plan and a pension plan when there were none. They raised their salaries. And America was better off for it. Make no mistake about it. I'm speaking from the point of view of a kid who grew up in a very poor blue-collar family. My father himself was the beneficiary, not of unions, but of a government job during the Great Depression. He told me that he was saved by the WPA, the Works Projects Administration. He got a job as a chauffeur for some lowly New York State Assemblyman. I don't even know how he got it. He was not political. I never even got a chance to ask him because he died in 1970 when I was a young man myself. But he talked at length to me about the Democrat Party of that time being the party of the working man and the Republicans being the party of the rich. And I heard all of that as a youngster. And believe me, it didn't fall on deaf ears. But as I got older, I came to see things for myself. And I watched how the parties themselves changed and who they represented. And today I must tell you that the Democrat Party today is the Socialist Party of America, representing the illegal alien, the welfare recipient, the government, city, state, local workers, etc. And I believe that the Democrat Party of John F. Kennedy would be considered a radical right-wing party today. John F. Kennedy today would be considered some right-wing Tea Party leader by Obama. Because the fact of the matter is that John F. Kennedy himself was a rational Democrat. Unfortunately, there are very, very few of them left. Now, what happened last night on this show actually should make publishing and radio history. And it will only because I'm going to tell you what happened on The Savage Nation. Yesterday, I kicked off my novel, Abuse of Power, which will not be in the stores until next Tuesday. It's being published by St. Martin's Press. And the book was in the 5,000 on Amazon. It was like number 5,000-something at the beginning of the show. I told you about it. I read from it. More than that, I asked you to go out and order it on Amazon in order to send the message to the degenerate elites in Hollywood and, frankly, and say to them, we're conservatives and we read fiction. And we're sick and tired of anti-American books, anti-American fiction, anti-American movies. We'd like something that reflects our values. And you drove the book to number one in the category of hardcover fiction. You will probably see it at a lower point right now. It was at number 20, but my agent said, Michael, at a number 20 on Amazon, the titles 1 to 19 are all either paperbacks, self-help, nonfiction, or children's books, meaning that your book, Abuse of Power, appears to me to be the number one hardcover fiction title. This is an amazing thing. Now, if I were to sit here and just talk about the book, I'd be bored, and so would you. But I want to extrapolate from what you did with this book based on one show, one day, and what you did back in 2012. I'm sorry, what you did in 2012. Okay, I'm going forward and backward now. What you did in 2010. There were a group of very powerful international bankers and other nefarious forces who put Obama into the White House, in my estimation. And I wrote about it in the book Trickle Up Poverty, which sold over 200,000 copies in hardcover, published by Harper's back in the, last year. But you see, something happened after that book came out in 2010. There was an election. And at the election, all of the Democrats, with the exception of two, were thrown out of office. Anyone who ran lost, except for two races. The Republicans swept the elections in 2010. The media would like you to forget that. The media would like to tell you that it didn't happen. But the media is a liar. The media is a whore. And she's a lying whore at that. Not all whores are liars, but in this case, the media is a lying whore. I got to tell you that. Because there was an election, and you voted. And it's the very same audience that made this book what it became yesterday and will make it what it becomes next week when you go into the bookstores that threw the bums out in 2010. And you're going to do it again in 2012 unless, and here's the kicker, unless Obama continues to grant amnesty to illegal aliens in the darkest of nights on Sundays and on Friday nights. For example, over this last weekend, Obama's cousin, his political cousin, Governor Jerry Brown of California, another radical leftist who posed as a centrist to get reelected, but went back to his radical leftist roots after he seized power through the help of the SEIU and other unions. Over the weekend, Jerry Brown granted amnesty to illegal aliens in the form of the so-called DREAM Act. He gave free tuition to illegal aliens in the state colleges of California when the state is broke to the tune of $20 or $30 billion a year. That's the exact opposite of the prescription that is necessary to save California and save the United States of America. And that is because the radical leftist or communist elites could care less about America. They care only about aggrandizing power and more power. And so you drove the elections in 2010. You have driven abuse of power to where it went on the list. And you did it without the cable news networks. You did it without Fox News. You did it without the bloggers. You did it without Rush Limbaugh and Sean Wallbanger. You did it without, in other words, the media elites. You are the independent voters of America. That's you. The members of the Savage Nation are the most unrequited force in American politics. You are the most powerful, unrequited force in American politics. Romney had dinner with me in 2010 and wouldn't come on the show after that because his campaign advisors, who are professional freelancers who could work one day for a Democrat, the next day for a Republican, one day for Romney, the next day for Karl Marx. It doesn't matter to them who they vote for. They could fly down and vote for work for Chavez after they get through with Romney. They said to him, oh, don't go on Michael Savage's show. He's too extreme. He's too unreliable. He's not a member of the party. So Romney wouldn't come on the show. We got the same from Bachman. She came before you. She begged you for money. I sent her money. You sent her money. You saved her hide when she was being attacked by Nancy Pelosi. And then her handler said, don't go on the Michael Savage show. Well, where is she today? What happened to Bachman? What happened is you heard me tell you what she did, and you drove her down in the poll. Make no mistake about it. I don't need the papers to confirm this. I know what happened. It was because of my campaign of truth with regard to Bachman that she's become and also ran. And I'm going to tell you something else. Perry won't come on the show. And if this continues, you're going to have Obama again. I'll tell you that right now. I'll tell you why. Not because you have the power to vote. It's because you have the power not to vote. See, that's something that people don't understand. The only reason we won the elections last year in 2010 is because the base was electrified. The conservative base went out, and they voted the Democrats out. But if the Republicans and the fake independents continue to disappoint you, continue to disrespect you, you're not going to vote for them. It's not that you're going to vote for Obama. You just won't vote at all. They haven't figured out why Carly Fiorina lost in California. They haven't figured out why Meg Whitman lost in California. It wasn't that they were too liberal, which they were. It's that they would not talk to the conservative voter. They wouldn't even throw you a scrap of what you wanted. Neither Whitman nor Fiorina would talk about the illegal alien hordes that have taken over the state of California. Not one word against the illegal alien hordes. Not one word about Islamofascism. Not one word about the cultural degeneracy in California that is raping us and killing us. Not one word out of Whitman or Fiorina. So why should you get out and go vote for them? If they're not representing you, you didn't. And that was the end of the election. And it's the same story right here in the Savage Nation. You are the most unrequited and the most powerful force of independence in this country. And I want to thank you for driving this book where it has gone. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I just got an email from my friend Dr. Sarfati. He writes, you hit the bullseye just now about Bachman, Perry, Romney, how Savage Nation is the swing vote or the none vote. Remember, you have the power to not vote. That's a stronger power than voting, in case you don't know it. And it's why the Republicans continue to lose elections, is because they don't excite the base, okay? Now, in dictatorships, they actually force you to vote. Did you ever figure out why they force you to vote in dictatorships? Well, now you understand why, don't you? Because by not voting, you're actually voting. And that's what's going to happen to the Republicans again if they continue to give you the middle finger. And I'm telling you, I can see it coming again. Bachman stabbed you in the back. Romney stabbed you in the back. Perry is now giving you the middle finger. That's because they're afraid of the real conservatives in the country. No matter what they may pose as, I'm telling you, that's how I see it. That's one man's opinion. That's all it is. Now, we're going to go back to the book Abuse of Power. I want to read you a few pages from San Francisco, because this is where the book gets really interesting. And Jack's walking around the city. He's trying to find it, you know, make a living now, because they threw him out after what they did to him. In the week following the blast, Jack found himself between assignments. He spent much of that time trying to get information from the FBI press office about progress in the case, but they were as tight-lipped as always. So he kept himself busy with idle pursuits, drinking in the city he loved. He enjoyed being downtown during the 9-to-5 hustle. The buses, the rush to the underground BART, tubes on Market, the girls hurrying to dates with their girlfriends in this gay-friendly town where straight men were as rare as eagles. He loved the loud twitter of the green parrots of Telegraph Hill as they alighted in tall trees near Bum Park, adjacent to the Embarcadero office tower, seeking shelter for the night. Sometimes Jack would marvel like a schoolboy at the great flock that flew outside the apartment he kept by the bay, chattering in a mad formation, racing to their next stop. He was amazed by the large number of green parrots in the wild flock, said to have grown from a single pair that had escaped captivity some 20 years back, parrots from South America. They had taken to the trees of Telegraph Hill and dispersed into other sections of the city. And then I talk more about the birds and about Maxine and the plot. And then he goes, and she says to him, Maxine, she's the black detective he works with. She says to him, how are you going to survive, she asked, showing genuine concern. He said, I've got a little cushion. That was something he owed to his father. Not the money itself, but the idea of saving. He used to tell his son, you can always count on watches breaking. What you cannot rely on is people getting them fixed. He watched his money carefully, and the lesson wasn't lost on Jack. That was another area where his former wife and he had disagreed. She liked to indulge in the fashions of the moment, from expensive clothes to fancy restaurants. Jack didn't mind some of that, but as a treat, not a lifestyle. And it wasn't just her. That sense of entitlement, of rampant decadence, was everywhere. Driving over the Golden Gate Bridge one night, Jack wondered about the decline of America. He couldn't believe that the entire bridge, this beautiful Art Deco structure, had been built in only 2 years. Such a fate would be impossible today, considering the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the laws, the lawsuits, the regulations, the spotted owls, and the environment. Construction would take forever. As with all those hypocrites, the special interests had jumped up their own self-importance, inflated their own influence and resources at the dearest price of all, the diminishing of America. As he drove under the South Tower, Jack looked up at the spires. He was one of the few civilians that knew there were elevators running inside these spires right to the top. An old Bohemian friend from North Beach had been an iron worker on the bridge and once took Jack up to the top to see one of the most stupendous views in the world. He felt as if he were only a step away from heaven. Page 53, Abuse of Power. On Friday, Jack and Tony walked to Pagliacci's on the Wharf, one of their favorite restaurants, taking the long way up Columbus Avenue. On the way, they saw an old familiar face, Johnny Evans, retired SFPD. They nodded hello as they passed. Married 3 times, noted Jack, when they were out of earshot. All brief wives, muttered Tony. Brief wives once made the briefs rise, Jack retorted. Now they fill the court's briefs with lies. Tony snorted a laugh. A new mantra? Not new, Jack said. Just haven't thought about it for a while. Well, go easy on the Rachel juice. You don't want your ex-wife coming up on you. True enough, it's just that she's been on my mind. Because I think it's a default setting. Things come apart like they did the other day. It shoots me to my own blast zones. Iraq or Rachel. Familiar turf, stuff you've already wrestled with, lets you get your footing to process new trauma. Well, I'll continue later on the Savage Nation. But you'll have to go along with me, because this is very important, because this is from one of my most lovely advertisers, and I've told you about this before, and it's very important. Here I am reading to you from Abuse of Power, and you got to understand that unless you can hear me, You can't leave a legacy to your children and grandchildren, because sharing your wisdom and experience with your kids and grandkids is one of life's most important callings. But how can you do it if you suffer from hearing loss? This gift could be lost, because to leave that legacy requires effective two-way communication. Well, right now there's a new medical breakthrough for those with hearing loss called the Esteem Hearing Implant. This revolutionary solution is 100% invisible, so you can keep up your active lifestyle. The Esteem Hearing Implant delivers a natural improvement to your hearing with a natural clarity of sound. If you want to learn about this new breakthrough and give your children a legacy they will cherish for a lifetime, I want you to call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Write it down. That's 800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. Do it today. Call 1-800-953-5453 or envoymedical.com. For a list of side effects and benefits associated with Esteem, visit envoymedical.com. I'll be back in a moment to continue more of the day's politics leading up to the so-called debate that's coming up, and more reading from Abuse of Power right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Now, there's a guy, most people in this room haven't heard of him, but there's a guy, Matt Drudge, who runs a website. Some of you may have heard of it. And
I have my own nickname. It's kind of a deal, man. You know you've kind of made it when you get your own nickname. I think my nickname is Big Sis.
Right, and of course, Matt used Big Sis, and I want to thank you, Matt, for circulating my moniker for Miss Napolitano, because I used it first. I'm glad that Politico's Mike Allen can quote a source and get it incorrectly, but that wouldn't be the first time for Politico. But if you remember, it was Big Sis is a Miss, which I used back in the 90s on this show, that led to the moniker. But that's okay. As Lao Tzu said, it doesn't matter who gets credit for what you say. It's just that people are saying it. That's what's important. So let me go back to let me go to the callers. Let's go to New York City, WOR. Remember, this is a talk radio show. I'm excited about the book, and I want to keep reading from it. But stop me if you wish. Pauline in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Hi, Mike. When you first mentioned Abuse of Power, I kind of thought that I wouldn't be interested in that type of book. But now that you're reading the excerpts, I just want you to keep going. It's like a page turner. I don't want you to stop. It's so good. And I'm really surprised, because I really didn't think I'd be interested in the book.
Well, it's a story. It's a thriller. It's not a diatribe. It's not a political book. There are politics in it, but it's based on, it's a novel and it's a thriller. So I'll tell you what, I'll send you a free copy if you call a friend and tell her to, dial up Amazon and buy one tonight. Let me read you another page from it, okay, about Jack. It's a beautiful page in San Francisco. So he's walking down to the Fisherman's Wharf with his friend Tony, right? And they pass the cop, Johnny Evans, and they nod and they keep going. And one says to the other, "Married 3 times," noted Jack when they were out of earshot. Tony mutters, "All brief wives." Jack says, "Brief wives once made the briefs rise. Now they fill the court's briefs with lies." Tony snorted a laugh, a new mantra. Now, I think that's very funny, by the way. I realize I'm only a conservative with no sense of humor that the liberals who smoke pot have, but I do my best. So they're walking on and on. And then he says, "Columbus Avenue crested near a Chinese herb store where Tony bought a cure for prostatitis 20 years back. Small black pills. Took them for just 4 days. Never another ache. The instructions showed which herbs were in the pill and what each did in the body. The theory behind the cure was explained in Chinese and then in English. The herbalist thought all prostatitis was first caused by an uncured venereal infection, a sort of latent gonorrhea. The pill contained a powerful antibacterial plant. It worked so well that Tony bought bottles for his friends, who were amazed by the results." At the top of the hill, Jack and Tony both smiled inside at the view of the bay past Alcatraz to the green hills of Marin. It was one of those sunny but cool winter days when the water was China blue, as Tony often described it. This was one of the good touchstones, a place Jack visited to purge the negativity. It was like those old World War II newsreels, "Why We Fight." This was why. His home. It never failed to raise his spirits. At the restaurant, where old-timers who still knew where to get the best seafood still ate despite the touristy nightmare they called the Redneck Riviera, Tony and Jack enjoyed a quick lunch. After a few glasses of wine, Jack became loud. Pointing through the large picture windows, he almost shouted at Tony, "Look, see over there in Ghirardelli Square? that clock tower. Most clock towers, even our famous tower at Berkeley, they're all derived from Giotto's Campanile. He went on while Tony stared at him. Think about this, Tony. Built in the 14th century, and how many thousands of structures have been derived from his genius design. What do we have now? Web designers? Fake artists? No new music of any value? What will the derivatives be from this wasteland? Tony nodded as he devoured his scongeli. He was used to Jack's enthusiasms, and although he agreed with most of them, he had long ago decided that living well was, in fact, the best revenge. The rest of Jack's nights were mostly spent kicking back on the Sea Rider, listening to the gulls in the harbor and the gentle lap of the bay. Tony always seemed to have a new wine sample. One night he brought a bottle and poured Jack a glass, saying, "Try this. Tell me what you think." Jack was a sipper, not a twirler. Dry, tannic, ruby red. "Good," he said. "Better than that other one. What was it? A Gaia? Did this one cost $500 a bottle, too?" $35 with my BevMo discount," Tony said with a wry smile. "Amazing. What is it?" "It's French, from Bordeaux, Saint-Emilion, from the airplane manufacturer's estate, Chateau de Sault, 2005. "How the hell do you find these?" Jack asked. "Taste, my friend, taste. Got to keep trying." Amen to that, Jack thought, as a long week drew to a close. That's page 55 of Abuse of Power. So you see, although I'm a conservative, we do try our best. We realize that only those in Hollywood can write fiction, and only those in Hollywood can make movies. But although we conservatives stumble along with one eye, we do our best. You know, as Freud said, if you wake up one day and find out you only have one arm and one leg, well, learn to crawl on one arm and one leg. So I'm doing the best we can. Well, let's go to the callers on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. John in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Michael, John here. I'm one of your conservative foot soldiers out in the field. I was one of the guys that took Tup into the election booth last November, proudly showing it up and getting...
Oh, you took trickle-up poverty in. I remember that. And you were almost thrown out of the booth by the little old lady from the League of Women Communists.
I had to feel sorry for them, but I held it up loud and proud. But anyway, looking forward to seeing the other facet of you, Mike, with this novel that's coming out.
Do you generally read fiction, or are you kind of guy who never reads it?
Lately, just life has gotten so crazy, I can't even slow myself down to do some reading. It's really a shame. And I
understand. Well, this one speeds along because it's a thriller. I'll send you a free copy of Abuse of Power. Chicago, Janet, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I have been listening these past 2 days, having you reading the book, and it is brilliant. I love the way you expose Soros and all the other characters.
Oh, no, it's not based on George Soros. The character has no resemblance to anyone living or dead. It's a complete fiction, Mr. Sorin, in the book. No relationship whatsoever to George Soros.
What I wanted to say is that I'm a homeschool mom, and my kids don't particularly like listening to talk radio. It's a little bit dry and above their heads, but they love listening to me read to them and historical novels. I've done a lot of that in our homeschool, and so I'm thinking that this will be a way.
You're going to get a free copy for them. I told you all winners this week, so stay on the line and you get it. If anyone's dog actually likes listening to my reading of the book, I'd like to hear from you. If you can prove that your dog perked up while I was reading from Abuse of Power or rolled over or did something novel, I will send you a copy of the novel. I'm having a good time. So Big Sis is definitely a miss. And as I say, things are what they are, but the listeners of the show know exactly who's what and who's who, and that's the end of it. So we played clips from the movie Hoffa. We played Hoffa Jr., and we asked ourselves, will there be an Oktoberfest surprise from Hoffmeister Jr.? And we have to wait and see. We don't know yet. But now we're going to go on to something new. Here we have another slime ball of the lowest order, New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg, who continues to impress me with his stupidity. Bloomberg is the poster boy for proving that a billionaire can be an idiot. Listen to him in clip 8 now, what he's doing now.
We will never forget the devastation of the area that came to be known as Ground Zero. Never. But the time has come to call those 16 acres what they are, the World Trade Center and the National September 11th Memorial and Museum.
You're a shanda to your people, Bloomberg. You're a shame to your people. You're a shame to yourself. You're in favor of the Ground Zero Mosque. You want to take away the word Ground Zero. Why don't you go to Hawaii and tell them to take away the Pearl Harbor Memorial, too? Because it maybe it embarrasses the Japanese. Don't call it the Pearl Harbor Memorial. Call it the National Japanese Memorial or something in Pearl Harbor in order to make certain that you can continue to peddle your goods worldwide. This is sickening. This is an example of everything wrong with liberal elites. Mayor Bloomberg, shame on you. What else is in the news? Well, everything's in the news. You're the biggest news, actually, out there. Don't expect to read it anywhere else. But I want to go back to what I told you earlier on the Savage Nation in a few minutes, and that is about don't fall into the trap set by Mr. Obama and Mr. Hoffa when they call you names and they say that you have to be taken out. Because if you fall into the trap, you're only going to empower them. Tim in Ohio, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I have come across you a couple years ago. I'm a truck driver, and I just want to tell you, keep up the good work. You are such a refreshing voice to hear, both politically, and I love your sense of humor. And I just wanted to tell you, keep up the good work.
Well, that's nice. You mean a trucker still listens to me, huh? Even though you were told not to.
Even though I was told not to, yeah, just because Hoffa says something doesn't mean that the truckers are going to listen.
Right, and it doesn't mean that the unions are bad just because somebody goes down to that level either, by the way. Some unions are clearly dangerous, such as the SEIU, for many reasons. But I appreciate this, Tim, and I'm sending you a copy of Abuse of Power because everyone's a winner today. Let's go to New York, WOR. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. I'm so excited to talk to you. I was with my daughter today, who is 36, 37, whatever. She has five children, and I was telling her all about it, and she was very excited. I'm going to order her. I ordered my other daughter a book for her group. She has a book club that she does once a month. So I am ordering my other daughter
a book. That's very sweet of you, Suzanne. I'm telling you, you are the difference in this country. The women of America, the women of the 18 to 20 women listeners that I have, if each one of them went out and bought a book, just think what a change that would make. Suzanne, free copy coming. No, think if all 20 listeners who are women, all 20 women listeners of the Savage Nation went out and bought one copy, just think how that would change the course of human events. Fresno, California. Roger, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I just wanted to thank you for your common sense and enlightenment and tell you what an inspiration you've been to me, and I enjoy Trickle Up Poverty, and I'll be getting Abuse of Power when it comes out on the 13th.
Isn't that nice of you? Well, I do hope people remember that next Tuesday's D-Day, and the book hits the stores, and I want you to go in and clean it out like locusts, because otherwise the publishing industry will continue to publish books that don't reflect the values of America. So I'm sending you a free copy of Abuse of Power. This is a big step for me. It's a change of pace. I've gone from nonfiction to fiction because I said to you yesterday, you want to change the country, you got to change their thinking. You want to change their thinking, you got to reach them where they are. Where are they? They live in movies. They live in stories. If you don't change the stories in the movies, you're never going to change America. Because right now the liberals own the movies and the liberals own the stories. There are occasional exceptions. There's no question about it. But when have you last read a conservative thriller? There are only a few of them out there. Most of them can't get to first base. If I didn't think this book was superb, I wouldn't even be reading it to you. I wouldn't have written it. They wouldn't have published it. And the fact of the matter is, I wouldn't be reading it to you. I would have ran out of steam already. But I got to tell you, these last 2 days have been an eye-opener. On a personal note, I was a little nervous yesterday when the day dawned and I had to go on the air and talk about the book. I was afraid. The book was at 5,000. I was afraid that the magic wasn't going to be there. I really was. I didn't know if the audience would turn out the way they did for my nonfiction bestsellers like Trickle Up Poverty. I didn't know. I took a chance. You didn't disappoint me. That's all I can say to you. And I want to repeat again what I said yesterday. Even though no one mentioned it, I'm going to say it again so it's memorialized. Every dollar in royalty profit that I make after the advances are paid off, I will put into the Savage Legal Fund to continue my legal battle against the United Kingdom to get my name off that list, okay? That's a given. Every dollar beyond the advances, so that, you know, they have to go past a certain amount. If I get any royalties out of this book after that, I'm going to put that money into the Savage Legal Fund. And after I win that case, which I will do eventually because I never give up, I have never quit. I never will quit. I won't quit until I'm exonerated from that dastardly list that was put together of murderers and terrorists. Remember, I'm the only member of the American media barred from entering England. Don't ever forget that. And this book is based upon that true story. When that happens, whatever's left in the legal fund, should there be anything left, I'm going to put it into a conservative scholarship fund for young people who want to go to college, who I'm going to try and help. I would have done it 2 years ago, but I've been enmeshed in legal nightmares for a couple of years, and I've still been able to write a book and do a daily radio show, and I'm still not dead. Thank God, and I owe it all to Teddy. My poodle who's here right next to me, my 10-pounder, who is the mascot of the show. Now I owe it to God, truthfully. Did I tell you what the simple prayer is every day? Did we go that? Should I do it now? You want to hear the simple prayer? Those of you who won't buy the book, you religious Christians out there who only buy books by Mr. Hemorrhoid. But I told you what the prayer is. If you're a kind of person who is still nominally a believer in your religion, but you don't go to a house of worship, or even if you do and you don't feel touched by it, would you try this prescription for 5 days, once in the morning and once at night, and then take 2 aspirin and call me after a week? Just put your hands together in a quiet place. It could be in a car when you park it. It could be, I don't care where it is, it doesn't matter. God doesn't care where you are. It could be in a toilet. How's that? I mean, you know, doesn't matter. That's not a joke. It could be in a tree with your back to a tree. Let's say you haven't been touched in a church or a synagogue or wherever. You just don't feel it. You go in and it's mumbo jumbo. The words are so wooden. They don't mean anything. King in heaven, Father in heaven. It doesn't mean anything anymore. We're not children living in the desert growing olive trees anymore with burning bushes. This idea of king in heaven and God in heaven, it doesn't reach you. I know that. The rhetoric is all wrong. The language is wrong. I'm a language expert. If I ever get around to it, I'll rewrite some of the services and maybe people will find God again, okay? But right now, here's what I want you to do. Or try it. I don't want you to do anything. Just say to God once a day, thank you for giving me another day of life and a day without pain. That's all. Then if you have a little more desire, say, then pray for somebody in your family who's sick. Or thank him for their health. Or pray for someone who's dead. If you do that in the morning and night, try it for a week, see what happens in your life. I don't know. Maybe nothing. Maybe that'll help. I'll be right back. Welcome back. You know, some of the funniest things happen between breaks when I start goofing around with the guys, Beowulf and Charles and Doug. You know, I don't do this alone. It is a team, and I want to thank them. But, boy, I just broke them up with a parody. I had to let go of some tension myself. I wish you could hear it, but you can't. It's not possible to broadcast what I just said, is it, Beowulf? I mean, Jack Hatfield had trouble, but believe me, I'd have more than trouble if you heard what I just did, the parody I just did for them on the Savage Nation. Okay, let's take a couple of quick callers here. Oh, what's coming up? Something very unimportant. Oh, the Republican debate is coming up in a few minutes, isn't it? And is Newt Gingrich still on the podium, Beowulf? Is he still there? You see, this is an example of the Beltway. Talk about a Beltway. I don't think they make a belt big enough to fit him, but that's what goes on when you're in the Beltway too long. They run out of belts that fit. Tracy in... New York, Peter, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, best of luck with your new book. I'm a huge thriller fan of fiction, and I read a lot of Vince Flynn novels and McCarr, and I'm really excited about your book. I think it's going to be a huge success.
Yeah, that's what I want to hear from people who've read Clancy and the newer guys after they read the book. I want to hear what they say is what it comes down to. So who are the big guys today in the thriller category?
Like Vince Flynn, you know, he has it's just a repetitive character named Mitch Rapp. He's real, and Vince Flynn's real conservative.
Right. I heard about that. Now, here's the thing: if Jack Hatfield takes off in this book, Jack will be in another, you know, fiction thriller with another conservative orientation, where some political statements are made in the book that are rarely heard elsewhere, except perhaps on talk radio, and even there, you know, it's limited.
Right, and I'm telling you, Vince Flynn has a huge audience. So I think that your potential with this character and with your
well, there's room for another one. I mean, he writes thrillers that people like. Peter, I'm sending you a copy. You know what? Call me after you've read it. and tell me what you think of it. Let's go to Brian on WOR. Fire away, Brian. 30 seconds are all I have.
Mike, that's all I need. This is big, this next election, Mike. It's bigger than whether they come on your show or not. You have to support the people who get win the primary.
Well, I supported McCain even though I knew he was a rhino. I didn't want to, but I supported him. What good did it do? He shot himself in the foot because he wanted to lose.
The election season and the camp.
I understand it's bigger than me, and I hear you. But if they don't come on the show, they're telling you not to vote. Never mind me. They're telling you not to vote.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Back to the Savage Nation. The news is phenomenal everywhere, and we're going to get to all the news today. The third Guardsman died in the IHOP shooting. There's a story on the Muslim overtaking of France with 2,000 mosques opening and thousands of churches closing. The country has more practicing Muslims than Catholics. That's a microcosm of what's happening here in America. In France, there are more Islamic mosques being built and more frequently than Catholic churches. And there are more practicing Muslims than practicing Catholics in the country. Why is this happening? It's happening because it is the Second World War all over again, but now it's the Third World War. It's an occupation of land, of districts in which religious law enters into force. It is an occupation. There are no tanks or soldiers, but nevertheless, it is an occupation, and residents know it. And why has it happened? France has been invaded by Muslims and has been betrayed by its liberal elites. There is no question the same thing has gone on in the United States of America. The ex-US of A under the Marxist regime of Barack Hussein Obama. Now that ties into the Abuse of Power novel that I wrote that is coming out next Tuesday. I talked about it yesterday on the Savage Nation for a bit. And we drove it from it was number 5,000 and something when the show began. You're not going to believe this, but my agent said to me, it's actually number one amongst hardcover fiction. He said, if you look at Amazon, the top 20, he said 1 through 19 are either all paperbacks, self-help, nonfiction, or children's books, meaning that Abuse of Power appears to him to be the number one hardcover fiction title. He said, this is an amazing thing. And it is an amazing thing, and it ties right into the Savage Nation audience. The reason Abuse of Power has become the number one best-selling hardcover fiction book on Amazon.com overnight is that it got there without the help of the high and mighty who said that Michael Savage was too extreme, that Michael Savage didn't play ball, that he made people uncomfortable. You see, you, the Savage Nation, you have broken away from the establishment of the so-called conservative counterparts. You actually started your own grassroots movement of real Americans who are dedicated to changing this nation, not because you're paid to do it, not because you're paid to talk about it, not because you hope to gain power, but because you love America. Let me be perfectly clear. The cable news networks did not send Abuse of Power to number one because I wasn't on them. The bloggers didn't send Abuse of Power to number one because no one mentioned it. It was you, the listeners of the Savage Nation, sent my book to number one. Other writers have made numerous TV appearances for weeks, and their books have gone virtually nowhere. I talked about my book for a single day on a single talk radio show and got more than all of their media connections could ever have gotten them. I think I even beat Dick Cheney, and he was everywhere. Why? Because while Cheney and the others are connected to the media elites, I'm connected to the independent voters of America, meaning you, the members of the Savage Nation. And those running for president would do very well to learn the lesson of what has happened here. Those who appear only on shows run by the media elites like Fox News and Rush are falling in the polls. But those who connect to the independent voters of America by appearing on the Savage Nation will rise to the top. They're not coming on the show. That includes Bachman, that includes Perry, and that includes the fellow from Massachusetts, Romney. You have demonstrated why Obama and every false conservative in the Republican Party should be frightened. They've lost their connection to the people. If my book, Abuse of Power, can become the number one fiction book on Amazon.com overnight without the help of the media, then they are no longer needed. If books boosted by the government media complex can be displaced by one man speaking the truth and the people who believe in him passionately, then come the next election, they'll be out of a job. You have voted for Abuse of Power and the Savage Nation. And soon that same force that drove you to buy my book will drive you to the ballot box. You are part of something right now, much stronger, much more tangible than the media elites will ever be. The empty suits and the empty skirts have long since predicted the death of talk radio and the Savage Nation, but it is not dying. I'm not dying. We're getting stronger. How else can you explain a book going to number one fiction hardcover, number one overnight, without the support of the cable networks, no Fox News, no talk radio, except this show? I may be invisible to them. They think that in order to be successful, you have to kiss their behinds and say the right things. Well, I don't happen to know the right people, and I don't say the right things. I say the truthful things. Maybe I'm unknown to the mainstream media, but you, the Savage Nation, know me, and that's all that matters. And now let's go on to the news, actually, connected to this, which is the abuse of power by Obama and Teamsters President Jimmy Hoffa. I'm warning you, don't fall into the trap set by Hoffa and Obama. In a Labor Day speech with plenty of cursing and warlike imagery, James Hoffa Jr. called upon his fellow Democrats to take out their opponents. Take out means to kill, doesn't it? Or to beat up, doesn't it? Given the Teamster Union's violent history, I warn my listeners not to dismiss Hoffa's speech as just harmless talk. Here is what I said. History is repeating itself. What's going on in America today with the Black Caucus first, and now the unions trying to stir up civil unrest, is right out of the pages of history. Back in the 20s, the unions and the communists in Germany were acting in a similar manner. There are many comparisons that could be made between the Weimar Republic of Germany and the United States of today. Think about the cultural degeneracy. Think of the out-of-control spending by the government. Think about the inflation. Think about the currency being devalued. The unions and the communists became street thugs in Germany in the 20s, as they are becoming under Obama, threatening the middle class and threatening businesses. Now, who battled those German street thugs? Unfortunately, it was the Nazi brown shirts. All this violence led to the rise of Adolf Hitler. Today, I believe this unrest in America is being provoked and orchestrated from the top by Obama's managers like David Axelrod. But you see, they want to provoke you. They want you to become more thuggish than they are. That will give Obama an excuse to seek even greater power than he already has. I warn you, don't fall for it. Don't overreact. Don't let them turn you into thugs like they are. This abuse of power by Hoffa and Obama is a trap. Don't fall into it. Also on MichaelSavage.com, let's see what other news there is. The Muslim overtaking of France. The country has more practicing Muslims than Catholics, thanks to the liberal elites who have sold out their own nation. Find out more about UK's ban of Michael Savage by reading Abuse of Power, although it's fiction. Strangely enough, you may learn some things that I couldn't say in public. Fears of major bank crisis in Europe is now spreading. The Mexican military is flying over Texas. Turkey ups naval presence amid tension with Israel. Obama hits all-time lows. DNC chairwoman dodges questions on Jimmy Hoffa. Former German leader Gerhard Schroeder, who was a street communist in his youth, calls for a United States of Europe where each nation will have to give up its sovereignty. Will it be the Fourth Reich, Mr. Schroeder? Mental illness affects 38% of Europeans. I think that's a low estimate. Greeley, Colorado. School hangs Saudi flag higher than the U.S. flag. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Finally, this is a shocker. Well, it's a shocker. The 9/11 program at the National Cathedral has left out Protestants and evangelicals. It will include a Buddhist nun and an imam and many Muslims, but evangelicals need not apply. That's America under the Muslim president that we have, Barack Hussein Obama. I'll be right back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I've been busy eating Indian food for lunch and went to a buffet, overate. I always say to myself, don't go to the buffets. You know what's going to happen. You're going to eat that second, third plate. I ate the fourth plate. You know what's going to happen. You're making believe you're going there for the rice and the vegetarian, then you're going to eat the lamb, and I did three times. Because you say to yourself, well, the lamb is dead anyway. It doesn't matter. The poor thing's dead. And you do a Hail Mary over the lamb three or four times. It's unbelievable. This is how you cheat on your diet, is you go to buffets and you go back three or four times. That's what matters to me at this phase of my life. Is my mother used to say it was Italian or Chinese at the end of her years. Now, I'm not anywhere near the end of my years. It is true. I'm putting together the Savage Library. I have someone archiving every radio tape I've ever saved going back to 1994. What a job. You'd think I was crazy. I have radio tapes going back to when I was a local host because I knew that there was gold in them Nor Hills, in them Nob tapes. And manuscripts, after all, I've only written 25 books, most of them in longhand, and the manuscripts must be worth something. I realize that I'm not as famous as a man who drowned a girl in a car, but there might be a buyer out there for such an estate. You never know. Might be worth a few pennies now and again. All of the handwritten manuscripts, the notes, the letters, the audio tapes going back to 1994. Things of that nature. So in my own non-Ubermensch way, I'm trying to put these things together. And I mean, that's what I've been doing sort of on the side here. Incidentally, you can see what I've written in part by going to michaelsavage.com. So if you want a copy, you really should order it. I was going through my archives today because the archivist needs all the tapes. And I uncovered mountains of tapes from 1994, 95, 96 when I was a local host. But leave it there on tape. These are on actual audio tapes. I used to drive them crazy at the station and make the poor engineers record these shows. And I would put little wrappers around them with handwritten notes. Like today I talked about Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick. That was in 94. I was still to things of that nature. Immigration out of control, 94, 95. All these notes are on. And I discovered old coins. Would you believe it? I found boxes and boxes of Morgan Silver dollars, Indian head cents. Then I stumbled upon some things owned by my children in storage. God, like junior high school report cards and journals that I had them keep when we take them on ocean trips when they were in school. I remember we used to take them on trips and take them out of school because there was a credo that your child will learn more on a cruise on an ocean liner in traveling and experiences than he will in the sixth or seventh or eighth grade. Well, that was a liberal credo. They wouldn't say that anymore because liberals don't travel with their children. They're too busy traveling with themselves so they can switch hit with each other while they're on the road, and the children are left at home with a house sitter with Ritalin. But we actually traveled with our children on ocean liners, and I found the journals, they're very touching. Usually the child, it's very much out of Mark Twain. It's very cute. The journals, I say, okay, look, son, here's what we're going to do. We're going on a trip for 4 weeks in December. You're going to be out of school. I'm going to miss 2 weeks, 3 weeks of school. But I'll tell you what, you're going to keep a journal of every port we go to. That's when I was collecting plants in the South Pacific, Fiji, Tonga, Samoa, the Palmyras. I mean, amazing places. And I said, and if you meet interesting people on the ship, you're going to make notes of it. And birds, you're going to make notes of birds that you see and things that... Sure, Dad. Great. Love it. And the first day, they sit at the table, you know, the card table, while the people are somewhere else up in the dining room, and they write.
You look at the journal 20 years later. It's only two pages are dutifully entered, and then the rest are blank because kids are kids. They were busy living and enjoying themselves instead of writing down a stupid journal that nobody would ever read. They actually were looking at the birds. They actually were running on the decks of the ship. God bless them. I'm glad they didn't keep a journal. But those first two pages were really well good. Penmanship was great. No, those are the days. You know that my bar bills, I still have some of the bar bills from those ships. My bar bills for wine and drinks were higher than my rent was. They used to charge you. There's nothing else to do on a ship other than drink. That's the big secret of why people go on. Well, you see, in those days, ships were a little different than they are today. Today, they're floating Las Vegas hotels. What they are is like a Motel 6 with propellers today. You can't even walk on a ship and enjoy the air without some kind of Muzak driving you indoors so that you gamble or buy some garbage that you could buy in Target for less money, for example. But in the days that I began traveling on ships, I traveled on some of the last great ships, the Oriana. In fact, I just found some artifacts from the Canberra, the Oriana. These were amazing ocean liners that were used for actual transport as opposed to being simply a floating brothel. Pardon me for leaving the news for a moment, but this is a talk show, and since it's a talk show, we talk about things other than the news, even though the news is very important, and things of that nature. But we talk about other things, particularly if you're a great conversationalist as I am, and being a Renaissance man as I am, I can talk about most everything with some degree of knowledge. Is there anyone listening to this show who is not an executor, but an appraiser of literary estates? Let me put it to you that way. I've written 25 books, right? So I have manuscripts, cartons, mementos. Then I have 15 years of tapes, radio tapes. They have to be worth a fortune because once I get this all put together and insured, I'm probably going to either sell it off or build a library and then donate all the money to charity. I have some idea of what this is worth, and I'm not going to throw the number out, but I want a genuine appraiser to call the show. I don't know how they do these things. I mean, they say that, let's say, Jack Kerouac's estate is worth $20 to $25 million. Now, he was a really great writer, and it contained his first manuscript for On the Road with a teletype roll and all of that, and then the family's fighting over the estate and blah blah blah. How do you determine what something is worth? I have millions of listeners, and I have several million readers of my books, so therefore there's a value. It's a matter of what the value is. And I don't know how you come to these terms. Or I'll just build a library. I have an idea for that. And the centerpiece will be the 1965 Cadillac, which right now has its fuel tank removed because apparently something broke in it. And the center thing will be the 65 Caddy with American flags on it when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. And then around it will be all sorts of artifacts and such from the Savage years.
Savage.
I'm an estimating group and just call them Teapot. This is the Fort Sumter Teapot, as distinguished from the Boston Teapot. The Boston Teapot led a revolution against a corrupt occupying force from Britain. This is in the lineage of Jeff Davis, of Robert E. Lee. This is the states' rights party. It's not just, this is the whole, some of them are drinking tea, some riding elephants. They're all about the same deal. It's like we're on the great Titanic. Their first obsession is to destroy the captain of the ship. If he said job, they said no job. That first deal is to destroy the captain. They want to protect those on the deck. But more and more of us are in the hull of that ship.
Yeah, come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now.
This idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down. Man's old age dream, the ultimate in individual freedom consistent with law and order, or down to the ant heap of totalitarianism. And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom for security have embarked on this downward course.
You know, we played that Ronald Reagan clip from his 1964 speech at the GOP National Convention in support of presidential candidate Barry Goldwater, because joining me right now is the executive director of the Ronald Reagan Foundation and Library, John Heibusch, to discuss the GOP presidential debate. John Heibusch, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, it's great speaking with you.
How would you compare the conservatism of Ronald Reagan to that of the candidates in the race to replace the Marxist President Obama?
Well, I know everyone on stage would like to do their best to emulate Ronald Reagan in one way, shape, or form, and they all have a little bit of Reagan in them, I think. There's governors and foot soldiers during the Reagan Revolution on stage. Basically, I think at their core, these candidates reflect Ronald Reagan in that they're for smaller, more effective government. They're for more freedom, less taxes. I think Reagan's spirit continues today in all the candidates that are running.
If you could, what advice would you give these Republican candidates?
Well, first, I think the best advice for any of these candidates, it goes without saying, is be true to yourself. That's certainly what Ronald Reagan was. Now, Reagan spent decades honing his philosophy and thinking very, very deeply about the issues. And once he came to the stage to run for the office, he had a very definitive viewpoint on where he thought the country should go. Now, so my best advice for each of these candidates is get yourself a real definitive viewpoint and stick with it, you know, right or wrong, hell or high water, because that it's that authenticity that Ronald Reagan had because of his views that I think really rang through. You're not going to be able to be the next president of the United States by, you know, manufacturing an opinion late in the game here. You've got to reach down in your soul and really come to grips with what it is you stand for and express it and communicate it as well as Reagan did.
Well, how important is this debate and others for these candidates?
Oh, this one's really important. You know, we're now into the post-Labor Day time frame when people start to tune in. And this one's particularly important because we've got all eight of the candidates on stage. This is the first debate where we have Governor Perry on stage with the others. I know most all eyes are on him, and I think the field starts to winnow itself now. There's a number of candidates in the second and third tier that, you know, are hovering in the 1 and 2% range, and they've either got to break through in the next few weeks or likely hang up the cleats. So tonight's debate is really critical because it'll set in motion a path over the course of the next month where we start separating the winners from the losers.
Okay, so what are you most looking for to happen or to hear in this debate?
I think in this debate, what's really critical for the eventual winner is it's all about the word differentiation. You know, many of these candidates have very similar viewpoints on a whole host of topics, from the size of the federal government and the role of the federal government and taxation and spending and things of that nature. And that's great, you know, especially if their viewpoints, in my personal opinion, will echo the kinds of things that Ronald Reagan stood for. But now what's critical is these candidates are going to have to sharpen their knives a bit, and they're going to need to be able to differentiate why they could more effectively represent the American people than another candidate. That's absolutely critical, because the voters have to make a choice. And if everybody looks like vanilla, this will be a tough race to sort out. So I expect you're going to see in the next several weeks, a lot of jabbing back and forth to make that differentiation happen. And the debate tonight is just an example of that.
It's obvious to me why they did it, but why do you think the White House tried to overshadow the debate with the president's so-called job speech?
Yeah, that's a good question. My personal opinion is that move was, you know, a bit cute by half. I think In the end, it boomeranged or it backfired on them. And the reason for that is it's put the debate on the map. You know, now there's a phenomenally greater number of people that plan to tune into this debate because they're aware of this debate. And the way they became aware of it was because the White House essentially tried to put this debate to an end by scheduling the president's speech on top of it. So in the end, it's turned out to be to the advantage of the Reagan Library and to, you know, all of our candidates who are appearing here. And we're pleased to see that. And, you know, politics is politics, but the debate, especially this Reagan centennial debate, will go on.
John Heibusch, thanks for being with us today on The Savage Nation.
Michael, it's great talking to you. Anyone interested in learning more about the library, just go to ReaganFoundation.org.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Do you think the Republicans are sons of bitches?
Well, I think they are. If they're trying to take away food out of the mouth of working people, what kind of a person does that? What kind of a person tries to take away collective bargaining from public employees, from firemen, from policemen, from teachers? What kind of a person wants to have go in and basically take away their pensions? You know what? That's a bad person.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians? AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199. 800-255-4199 or go to americaisrising.com. 800-255-4199, americaisrising.com. Theory of Marxism is that workers are alienated because they do not control their labor. And they make the products and yet they don't profit from them. And so they say, well, we need to create labor unions and the workers will assume political and economic power and take it away from the bourgeoisie. I've heard all of this crap in college, you know, a long time ago. And this is something that only a professor could come up with. And the reason is that an entrepreneur is the individual, man or woman, obviously, of any race, who has the foresight and the guts to come up with a product or a service, borrow the money or earn the money, invest it in the business, take all the risk, and gain most of the rewards. And in so doing, create the jobs that the workers enjoy without the worry that the entrepreneur has to keep his company going. How come that's left out of Marxist dialectics? The answer is because most of it's written by college professors who we now have running America. Obama's a college teacher. The man never created a product or a service that anybody needed other than BS. Obama's number one product is BS. BS is what he sold all his life. Can you name one product or service that Obama has ever created? Can you name one company that Obama has ever created? That's why we need a capitalist for a president, not a college teacher who doesn't understand the first thing about meeting a payroll or what it takes to raise capital in order to invest in the company, what it takes to keep a company going, with regulations thousands of pages long, with lawyers coming at you from every direction, threatening to put you out of business if you're too successful. Again, by losers in government and losers in academia who say you're exploiting the worker. Look what they're doing now with radio. They take a dumb moron, put him in the FCC, a diversity chief, a real genius. The schmuck never did anything in his whole life except push the diversity lie that the only reason conservative radio survives and thrives is because of a warp by the corporations, he says. It's because ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and all the newspapers in America, with the rare exception of the Washington Times, are all radical left-wing rags. So the people who are largely conservative tune into conservative talk radio as their only voice of freedom. That's the reason. Now we have a Nazi czar in the FCC who says, no, that's not the reason. That with more diversity, more localized talent, we're going to have a better nation. It's right out of the communist playbook. You want to beat the system, then work. If you want to work the system, then work the system over. In other words, don't do it through talent. Don't appeal to the audience through hard work, but appeal to the audience through constant rubbish put out by the liberal establishment.
This is a theory of revolution right out of the Marxism going on in America today under Obama. Everywhere you turn, you see the critique of capitalism and the theory of revolution espoused by Karl Marx now being pushed forward by his minions at every level of government. So, by the way, I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. I have an 11-pound gray poodle. It's a strange thing. This weekend I went around San Francisco over by the ferry terminal. It's my new hangout now. I like to go there once in a while. I like the buzz of the market. It reminds me of my father's market, all of the different stores. The cheese store, the bread store, the meat store, the vegetable store. It's packed. And the tourists are happy, and there's a healthy buzz. I enjoy walking through the thing because they took a dismal, horrendous ferry terminal, and they turned it into some thriving capitalist bourgeoisie emporium, which I love. This is something you never would have seen in Eastern Europe, you know what I'm saying? Where would they have gotten the money to invest in this? From the evil capitalists? From the evil bankers? From the evil investment community? Schmucks? So as I walk around with Teddy, people come up to me. Oh, are you Michael Savage? I said, yes. I said, how'd you recognize me? Through the dog. It's always Teddy. They put two and two together. They see the dog, they see the Gucci hat, and then they hear me, and then it's all put together. So I've renamed Teddy the Freedom Poodle. And I'm not going to repaint him red, white, and blue. He's going to remain Battleship Gray. I'm going to leave Teddy Battleship Gray, honestly. Cutest little guy in the world. God, they get so close to you. It's frightening. But look, the way it is they have to die before you. Otherwise, someone explain it to me. Someone smarter than me. I kept saying, why does nature set it up that we love these little creatures so much, then they die, and you're left with a broken heart? The answer is that if you died before them, who would take care of them? So God makes their lifespan shorter than yours. So the other night, I think it was Friday, and I decided what was going on. Remember I told you about a moth flew in my ear? I got very freaked out, and I said, what the heck? I never had anything like this happen. I realized what was going on here, and I don't want to be disrespectful to God, because I take that very seriously. I may joke around a lot, but there's one area I don't step over the line. You know what I'm saying? The big guy in the sky doesn't like you to mock him. He's not your friend. The guy up there is not your pal. I love these churches that say it's no longer worship, it's a celebration. That's it. It's finished. God doesn't want a celebration in church. He wants you on your hands and knees worshiping him. That's the setup. God wants you to worship him. Otherwise, don't even bother. You want a celebration? Then go to a folk dance. You want a celebration? Then go to a mosh pit. But you don't go into a church or synagogue for a celebration. That's liberal claptrap. You go in there to shake, and you go in there to beg God for forgiveness because you're no damn good. You're all no good. We're all no good. We're all fallen angels. And we're all bad every day of the week. And we all know we're bad. We all know we're bad. We know that we're bad. That's why we're human. The reason that we are bad is because the human being is bad. The liberal claptrap is that we're all good. We're all born perfect. And only the evil bourgeois society makes us bad. Yeah, right. Sure, that's how it works. So I couldn't sleep, as I said to you. So I got out my prayer book. And I said, oh, I'm not into it. I got to be into it. God talked to me with the moth. God said, okay, you're not listening. He said, you're not listening to me. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to put a moth in your ear. And you're not going to be able to get it out so easily. Then maybe you'll start hearing what I'm saying to you. Is that you're not listening to me, God said. God speaks to me in many ways. God speaks to you in millions of ways. You don't even understand it. You think God's got to come into your living room? What, do you believe Jimmy Carter? He's got to come down in a white cape and sit on your couch while you're waving around a snake and drinking arsenic? Bill Moyers and Jimmy Carter may believe that. But that's not the way God talks to you. You don't have to swing a snake over your head and drink strychnine. You're not Bill Moyers or Jimmy Carter. You're not from that neck of the woods. God speaks to you in a million ways. I mean, I could play to you, every time I hear a newborn baby cry, remember that song? Or touch a leaf or see the sky, then I know why I believe. Remember that beautiful song? What do you think that was about? That was a worship. He sees God in a leaf. The songwriter, the singer, understands that. God speaks to you every day in every way. So in other words, if you don't understand that, you have to understand that. Every breath you take is a miracle. It's a miracle when you think about the human being. It's miraculous that you still breathe every day, that you get up every morning and one little vessel didn't close down. Jewish prayer book says first thing in the morning, thank you, God, for breathing life back into me this morning. Because of the myriad vessels in my body, should even one of them be closed, I wouldn't be here. That's a miraculous concept written thousands of years ago before anatomy was understood. How was that written by the ancient Hebrews? That's why you have to understand the importance of religion and the importance of the Bible, whether you're religious or not. It's a consciousness that helps us understand the miraculous being of living. That's how I see it. So to get back to it, so I turned away from God over the last few months. I was getting very cynical. I was getting very stiff-necked. I was getting very strong-willed. I was moving away from God, starting into my cynicism again. I started to feel neglected and rejected because of what happened with Britain, and I felt all alone, and I started to turn from God, and God didn't like it. So things start to happen. So the moth in the ear, I start to say, okay, I'm sorry, I'll listen. So he says, okay, that's not enough. Listening isn't enough. Now start to worship again. Now start to pray. Prayer is a begging. Do you understand that prayer is begging? And when you're arrogant, you can't pray. Do you understand why Western man has trouble praying? And why the Muslim will defeat you at the end of the day unless you start worshiping God again? I don't think you understand what I just said to you. It was so fast. It was like a silver bullet that just went across the nation. Unless you understand what the faithful Muslim understands, they're going to win and you're going to lose. And that is because God wants you to worship him. Now, monotheism was begun by the Jews. Make no mistake about it. The Jewish religion was the first monotheistic religion. Then came Christianity, and then came Islam. Doesn't matter who started it. What you got to understand is the same God. One God, different ways to approach that God. And what I'm saying to you is, God is not your friend. It is a vengeful God that we have. I didn't say mean, I said vengeful. You cross him, he's going to cross you 1,000 different ways. You worship him, he might let you breathe another day. So what I'm saying to you is, start with the understanding that you are not God. Start with the understanding that you begin as dust and you end as dust. Start with the understanding that you come from a foul seed and you end as dust. Once you understand that and become humble again, and I don't mean humble to the next man. See, that's another thing that's misunderstood. You could be the most devoutly religious person who worships God and humble to God, and you could be an arrogant SOB to man because they deserve it. They need it because most men are not your friends.